Hello again, witches, seekers, and friends, and welcome to the Fat Feminist Witch Podcast, the show where we do a little ranting, raving, and wand waving. I'm your host, Paige, and together we're going to explore magic and spirituality, social justice, the psychic realm, the natural world, and most importantly, riding the hedge. Hey friends, and thanks so much for tuning in to episode 65, Hedges, Hearths, and Herb Crafters Tarot. Today I've got a review of the Herb Crafters Tarot, which I also use to deliver your February tarot scopes. But first I want to talk a little bit about witchy media, hedge witches, and the pagan Sabbat of Imbolc, which is this weekend, February 1st and or 2nd, depending on who you are. So I've watched two very magical series recently that both referenced a certain kind of witch, which is a hedge witch. They use this word in The Magicians on Amazon Prime and The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina on Netflix to describe witches who live outside regular magical society or have very informal training and sometimes even who can't be trusted or are somehow less powerful because they are on the outside. While some of this is kind of half true, I guess, I feel like a very essential part of the identity of the hedge witch is being forgotten by these shows, and that's called hedge riding. The act of straddling our world and the spirit world, of having one foot in either and being able to move between them. Traditionally, this is accomplished through, you know, meditation, of course, but also trance work, drumming, and the help of poisonous or psychedelic plants, and these kind of arcane occult magic. Which is awesome, right? Awesome. So the word hedge witch has these two meanings. You know, the first being our hedge riding, our going between the worlds. And the second being a witch who lives outside of town or outside of civilization, works alone, and is very knowledgeable about the plants and animals and natural medicines of their local area. A hedge is, of course, you know, a type of fence. And it symbolized that they were on the other side. They were outside. And this part is pretty well represented in both the shows I mentioned. And they even got another part of the hedge witch archetype, right? Which is that they're predominantly women. In The Magicians, which I love, it's a new love, but I love it. You have, you know, the magicians who train at an Ivy League type of college, and it's called Breakbills. And then you have ones who possess some ability for magic, but are not seen as worthy of schooling. They don't get in. The ones who continue to study magic outside of this are called hedge witches. And like those of old, they're on the outside, on the fringe, and doing things the more civilized and trained magicians would never consider. And a lot more of them are women. Breakbills has a male dean. The male lead, there is a male and a female lead, and the male lead is very much tied to Breakbills. And a lot of the characters that we meet there at the school are men. The woman lead is doomed, of course, to be a hedge witch. And when she hooks up with others, other hedge witches, their leader's a woman. And sexism is a really important part of that discussion. When the leader of the hedge witches was kicked out of Breakbills for, you know, shooting a little too high, she was expelled and had all of her memories erased so that she would, theoretically, no longer have access to this magic that she'd been studying and learning and strengthening for 4 years. Which is fucked up, man. That's real fucked up. Oh, so you can't do it in this, like, rich guy, like, super ceremonial way, so you don't get to do it at all? Nah. Luckily, you know, spoiler alert, it gets a little twisted later, and the hedge witches come out the hero more than once, and are seen as just as powerful and capable, if not more so. And this is very in line with the story of the hedge witch. Cast out, looked down on, a social pariah, and left out in the cold, even by others who practice magic. It's all politics and fucking patriarchy, honestly. In Sabrina, the hedge witches are all women, and their main thing is that they, you know, A, live and practice out in the middle of nowhere in a secluded location. They've got no coven, and they're very tied to their particular environment. And B, they are terrifying monsters, like literally, like they barely look like people, let alone humans, you know, which is different because, you know, the witches in that show are not necessarily human. They're magical creatures, but they're not supposed to be creatures. They're people. So in case you're wondering, yes, The Magicians is the superior show here. Just saying, I recommend it. So I love the modern adaption of Hedge Witches and the Magicians. But in general, I see this term and word used more than once to only describe those concepts of solitude or solitary practice, social exile, and working with natural medicine. Rarely is that more spiritual aspect included, and I personally think it's like the dopest part. Come on. This kind of forgotten element of this branch of witchcraft is very similar to shamanism, which is a spiritual practice that it's typically associated with many tribal people, though the term originated in Siberia. I didn't know that. You know, for a long time, I heard the word shamanism usually in the context of talking about Native American elders. And I really thought that it was an indigenous word here, but it originated in Siberia with the indigenous people there. Very cool. But they made physical medicines, but mainly focused on healing the soul, helping the community communicate with ancestors or deities, and they engaged in journeying to reach these other realms of existence and bring back the medicine that was needed. So this ability and this desire to move between worlds means these witches are more in tune with death and the spirit world than others. Sometimes this manifests in the tools and the ingredients they use in their practice, like bones and fur, animal fat, toads, porcupine quills, etc. Many have innate psychic abilities, like psychic dreaming or clairvoyance or mediumship, but some don't, and instead use the herbs and medicines to reach the place where they can do that. Isn't that, like, so much cooler than just, I like herbs? I mean, it's cool to just like herbs, but damn, that's cool. So the psychedelics and the ecstatic trance states of hedge witches are probably one of the oldest magical practices that, like, we know of in the world. Cultures all over the world used intoxicants and poisons to reach other states of consciousness, or open an oracle to psychic info, or go on an inner quest to find yourselves. All sorts of great, great stuff. Some of the intoxicants through time have been wine and mead. Alcohol is very intoxicating. And then we have poisonous plants like mandrake and belladonna. Even some stuff you have in your kitchen cupboard, like bay leaves, nutmeg, these were used to induce psychic trances. Really strong psychedelics like peyote and ayahuasca, things that seem a little more mundane like cannabis or mugwort and wormwood, which are actually like very ancient magical plants. They were used in a lot of different spiritual ways. And then finally, we get even a little closer to death and the poison with yew and henbane. So a lot of these are classic ingredients of flying ointments, which we talked about before. This is one of the ways that witches in myths were able to fly, or, you know, that's how they got they would inspire their regular household brooms to fly. But in reality, those witches were flying in a much different way. In these ecstatic states, the worries of the world and of our very logical mind, they just disappear. And instead, we're able to see and feel the things around us in an entirely different way. It allows you to feel and connect with the living spirits of these ancient and sacred plants. It allows us to travel to a time without, you know, the mortgage payment or the threat of losing your job or all of the things that you have to do when you get home. To a time when we could safely reach this state, you know, in the middle of a clearing under the light of a full moon, without the fear that what could happen to you while you're in this vulnerable state. Hedge witchery really is about surrendering to something bigger than yourself. You surrender to the planet. You surrender to the spirit world. You surrender to the spirits of the plants and the medicines that you work with. You surrender the ease of some modern conventions, and you surrender the need for ultimate control over everything. Surrender to many people sounds like weakness, but true hedge witches know that it's through this surrender that they can access real power, their own power, and the power of their land or their community or of their people. That is so much more than drinking herbal tea and living in a cute cottage outside of town. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's lovely. That sounds great too. But much of this stuff, this real hedgy stuff, is kind of taboo. Which is wild, because it's not like people stop doing drugs. Like, cannabis is becoming legal in many countries and states. It's legal in my country now, which is wild. And to my knowledge, the teens still hit the acid, the LSD, the mushrooms, psilocybin mushrooms, and MDMA just as hard as they always did. Youth. It was a good time. But there's also this stigma here against women specifically. And it's the surrender, the lack of a tight grip on everything and having to be everything to everyone all of the time. Being able to let go of that really is taboo for women. Women are expected to be everyone's designated driver, everyone's teacher and boss, and everyone's, you know, fucking mother all the time. So taking time to whatever you want to do to trip in the woods, no matter the benefits to you, is frowned on and can even land you in very real trouble. If I had to pick a modern example of this kind of hedge witch, it would be Sarah Ann Lawless, who makes flying ointments under the name Banefolk. So you can find her at banefolk.ca. I'm a huge, huge fan of Sarah's work, and I have been for years. I think she's a super interesting person, and she really is this kind of witch, and she's doing this kind of work, and it's so interesting. And it's so valuable to know about. It's such a huge part of history and of humanity. And recently on Twitter, she talked about how many women are afraid to practice with psychedelics, with this kind of spirituality, because of the threat of a million things, like a useless husband who can't watch the kids for 5 fucking minutes, or an overpacked schedule, or even the fear of things like child protection agencies taking their kids from the home. You know, an alcoholic or a coked out dad rarely initiates the kind of like CAS report that an intoxicated mother does, even when it's not any sort of addiction or problem, but recreation. And honestly, that's just fucked up. This is another way intense and extremely powerful magic is denied to people, and to women especially. This is why I think it's important that we don't forget the hedge riding part of this branch of witchcraft. Now, before you go thinking that I'm telling you that you absolutely have to go out there and you have to do heavy psychedelic drugs or you can't be a witch, I'm absolutely not saying that at all. I would not consider myself a hedge witch. I think I'm hedge witch adjacent. Some of the things I listed there, you know, are me. I really do use porcupine quills. I'm a big animal fan, right? And I know that the quill wasn't ripped out of a living porcupine. I know where it came from. I know that it was ritually buried. Like, I love stuff like that. Death isn't super scary to me. But it's scary enough that I am not constantly in the world of the dead, constantly in the spirit realm. You know, I'm not comfortable in reality, but I'm, like, determined to make it work. So so I don't necessarily consider myself a hedge witch. I find this to be a really, really interesting type of person, type of practice, because I think it takes a lot. It takes a very interesting mind and heart and soul to really embrace things like death and poisonous plants, you know, to reach out and hug and love your poisonous plants. It takes a really, really neat kind of witch to live that kind of life. So a lot of times, this misconception, you know, the hedge riding is taking out, and hedge witch is considered someone who, you know, lives in a naturalized area or lives outside of town in a forest or a country type area, you know, away from other people. You know, lives and works on the land, makes herbal medicines, very connected to nature. And as we know, that's really only half of it. And when people are talking about that kind of hedge witch, I think what they're really talking about is something like a hearth witch, or, you know, even green witch, if you want. And I am going to talk a little bit about these labels and how you shouldn't get hung up on them, so don't worry, that's coming. But the reason I wanted to talk about hearth witches, in addition to it being, you know, related to the hedge witch there, this weekend is the pagan or the witchy Sabbat of Imbolc. And the hearth is a really, really big focus of Imbolc. It's a big theme with the entire holiday. So I wanted to talk a little bit less about what a hearth witch is, because we kind of discussed it there, and more about what the hearth is itself and what that represents. When some witchy books mention the hearth, it's often, you know, it's in this very romantic context. You know, there's an old brick fireplace in a kitchen with a big cauldron hanging in it, and the hearth is covered in drying herbs. And it's beautiful and it's romantic, but it's really only kind of realistic. I mean, some people have that. A lot of museums have that, and that's real fun to go check out. Actually, I'm going to be doing that soon because it's going to be maple syrup season soon. Fuck yeah. Canada. It's beautiful, but not everyone lives in like a colonial era home or has any sort of setup like that. The hearth is technically the center of the home. Physically, it's the place where you no doubt spend the most of your time with your other home residents, so with your family or your pets, your loved ones, your friends, whatever. It's the focus of your home. For some people, the kitchen is still the physical hearth, but not for everyone. Someone could argue the TV or the couch is the hearth of the home, and they probably wouldn't be wrong. This is just because our lives have changed. And it's not just our houses that have changed, but like what home and what hearth means to us has changed. So how you care for your home is different. The makeup of families is different, and many people live alone but still find themselves caring for others, you know, caring for animals or working from home. Maybe they garden their brains out. I love being at home, man. Oh, man, do I love being at home. And my home is a big deal for me. I like decorating, and I like moving my things around. I like changing out the displays that I have. I love having houseplants inside the house, all inside the house, every room. My life's like goal, the big one, is to own my own house. And I'd be perfectly comfortable not sharing it with any other human residents. But I clear and I cleanse energy in my house a lot. I have, you know, full magical security system in place in my windows and shit. And I do mix magical ingredients into the cleaners I use, the baths I take, and my foods and my beverages. Now, I'm not a super badass homeschooling mom out in a colonial house in the country. Yeah, that sounds like a fucking lot of work, so props to them. But my practice is really, at its heart, very hearthy. And I'm in a downtown apartment with a cat and a balcony garden and like a very active home office. Like, so I don't quite fit that image, but I really do practice a lot of hearthy and home magic. So like I said, the hearth is a big focus around the Imbolc Sabbat. So I want you to think about what the hearth of your home is. Think about where it is physically, and also what you think the heart or the kind of overall vibe of your house is. Where do you feel most at home? Where do you bring others in your home to celebrate? And what makes that so special to you? If you want to get into doing magic around the home, Imbolc's a really good time to get started. Like, it's one of the big themes of the holiday is doing magic around the house and cleansing your home and your space for the new year. So cleansing, home and hearth magic, it's all very potent right now. That old image of that beautiful stone fireplace also comes back. You know, we incorporate the fire element in magic a lot at Imbolc. Christians celebrate a holiday called Candlemas around this time. And these two holidays really got blended together in, you know, the Christianization of Europe and stuff. So candle magic and bonfires and all sorts of really fiery ingredients like cinnamon and stuff like that. All of that is very Imbolc. So I'm definitely going to be lighting candles. I'll be lighting candles and I'm definitely doing stuff around the home. I might actually be moving to a new apartment. So I'm going full hearth witch at this point. I literally ordered cleaners for when I move. I ordered from Beau Magique, and I'll put the link in the description, of course. Beau Magique, she makes magical, a lot of it's hoodoo inspired, but not all of it, but she makes magical things here in Ontario. And I ordered a bottle of Chinese wash, which is like a spiritual cleansing for the floors, walls, everything. And I also got a couple bottles of Florida water. I got a nice big ass spray bottle for when I move. And I got a little one for, you know, for me, I like to cleanse the space that I'm working in. And I also bought other sprays that add a particular energy into a space, and I do that a lot. So I sprayed something here around the desk before I started recording that is very creative, and it's about manifestation, and it's about, you know, having the energy to do things and getting in touch with your dreamingness, you know, your dreamy brain, your creativeness. So I do a lot of stuff like that around the home. And my new house is going to be, you know, cleansed tits to teeth before I move myself in. Pretty excited. I actually saw an apartment today, and it was really nice. So, fingers crossed, friends. Fingers crossed. So, home magic. As always, if you want a book on that, it's going to be Magical Housekeeping by Tess Whitehurst. It's like my favorite. But if you really, really want to dive into hearth witchcraft or anything that's, it seems a little bit more traditional, where you're working a lot more with herbs, a lot of cooking, a lot of creating herbal magic and medicine, all really awesome stuff. There is a book called The Hearth Witch's Compendium. It has a lot in it. It has a lot of information. It has a lot of recipes on creating both magical items and then, you know, stuff you can create. There's foods and wines and tons of different recipes, salves and balms for healing. And it's a big compendium. So The Hearth Witch's Compendium by Anna Franklin. It's pretty good. And I definitely recommend it if you're interested in really going for it with that kind of natural and home-based witchcraft. Now, if you are looking into the hedge witchery and possibly the use of psychedelics, again, I highly recommend Sarah Ann Lawless, whose website is banefolk.com. If you look, there is an entire poison path reading list. So there are books on aphrodisiacs. Oh my gosh, there's so many. Books on psychoactive substances. And actually, she recommends a few of my absolute favorites, like The Witching Herbs by Harold Roth. And his website, alchemy-works.com, is also a really good source of information on a lot of poisonous plants. But she has a ton of books on psychoactive substances, books on witchcraft and about working with poisons in magic specifically, books on psychoactive fungi. Like, she has an entire section on psychoactive fungi if you're very interested in mushrooms. And then she just has so many books and websites and resources there if you are interested in these kinds of plants, if you're interested in psychedelics or working with poisonous plants. In general, I recommend her as a source of information. Her Twitter is, she posts very, very, so much information that is so good to learn. And she also posts it on Facebook. And another Facebook page you might want to look up is the Poisoner's Apothecary. Also post a lot of photographs and links to information about poison plants and using psychoactives in magic so that you guys can get a little better acquainted with that from someone who knows more. That is a lot of what I had for you today for the hedge witches and the hearth witches. I do have more coming up next. I'm going to review the Herb Crafter's Tarot, and then I'm going to use the tarot to deliver your February tarot scope. So we're continuing on the same path, and we're going to talk about some specific plants and some of the practices that go into crafting with herbs. But before we do that, I want to say that one little thing that I told you I would mention. For you, the wonderful witches who have invited real magic into your lives, these names and these labels, they aren't nearly as important as what you feel. You may be a hedge witch or a hearth witch, and today you could be one kind and something else tomorrow, and you might hate kitchens but think you're a kitchen witch, and all of that would be just fine. It's not important to box yourself into this identity. But I think it's just important not to forget a lot of these practices as we continue to move into the future. We talk a lot about mental health here on the show, and I guess more specifically, the barriers that I came up against when I was seeking out treatment for my mental illness. I've also been very fortunate to share the strides that I've made since then and the support that I was able to find. Sharing that with you showed me just how important it is to be able to talk about what you're going through and to get support from someone or many someones who care. That's why I'm proud to have BetterHelp as one of the sponsors of the show. BetterHelp is an online service that can connect you with real licensed therapists who can be available to talk on your schedule and right where you are. They have four different ways to communicate: text, chat, phone, and video calls. And there are professionals with a wide range of specialties. So there's a really good chance that you can find someone who's perfect for you, all without having to leave home. Everything's confidential. If you ever feel like your counselor is just not the right fit for you, you can switch right away. There's no charge. The service is very affordable compared to in-person therapy, and they even offer financial aid for those who need it. It's okay to need help sometimes. You deserve to get better, and you can start that journey at betterhelp.com/fatfeministwitch to save 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/fatfeministwitch. So in keeping with our theme today of witches that blend the natural world with their magic and with spirituality, today I'm going to review a tarot deck called the Herb Crafters Tarot. And I'm super excited to talk to you guys about it because, and I've changed my rating system to mystical eyeballs instead of crescent moons for this one, but it's got 5 mystical eyeballs out of 5. Because this is an incredibly well done tarot deck. So the Herb Crafters Tarot was written by Letitia Guthrie, and the artwork is by Joanna Powell Colbert. The artwork and the book, the writing, all of it goes together so, so well. And they put an extraordinary amount of effort into the entire process of creating this tarot deck. And you'll see that as we go through the review here. So this deck explores the ways that, witches and herbalists, medicine people, the way they blend using the herbs and the plants for physical purposes, for medical purposes, for health purposes, and how they also use them in ritual and in creative practices and in magic. So I was looking for quite a while for a deck of tarot cards or even oracle cards with a tie to plant magic and with nature. And I'm really glad that this is the one I went with. I honestly wasn't sure before I actually had it in my hand. The cards are the perfect size. They're made of good cardstock. The artwork is great. The cards don't stick together when you're shuffling. You know, all of that's really fun. But the book goes into such great detail about each of the cards, about the choices made behind the scenes in creating the deck, behind the artwork, behind the different plants that they chose for each card. So even though it's a tarot deck that doesn't really follow classical style in symbolism, like the Rider-Waite or, you know, Crowley's deck, which can make it kind of difficult for someone who's very new to tarot, I really loved how they tied the meanings of the cards with the personalities of magical plants. So I've basically got 5 reasons that this got a 5 out of 5. First of all, the plants are not just art on the cards, but they are a big part of the energy of the deck. That means each plant is fully explained. Its environment is described, and even its uses in magic and in folk healing. And that sounds like something that might be true of all plant decks, but they're not. Some others that I looked at that have, like, you know, beautiful botanical artwork, they really only use those plant images as art. Beautiful art, but just art. Nowhere was the choice of, you know, why a certain flower or plant was on a certain card. Nowhere was that explained. The Herb Crafters Tarot is very, very clear, and so it can actually teach you about plants and about herbal medicine as you go through and use the cards and read them regularly. The next thing I really loved is that this deck was created by 2 people working together, and they do have some shared Celtic heritage, but the writer, Letitia Guthrie, also has Mexican-American heritage. So the plants featured are this really incredible mixture of, you know, a lot of the European plants that you North American witches might be used to, things that you would find here in Canada, specifically the Pacific Northwest, and then plants and practices from the Sonoran Desert. And this is incredible. It's also very different. It's so different because it's not just one white person making a deck based on, you know, Mexican practices. There's a real Mexican practitioner there to give you that context and that background. It's beautiful. So in addition to some plants that you might think are common, like rosemary and plantain, which grows in like sidewalk cracks, and mugwort, you have plants like the yucca, cacao, aka chocolate, and ocotillo cactus. Very, very nice. And it explains their significance in Mexican culture and in folk medicine. It's beautiful. The court cards have also been renamed, and they have Spanish names for herbal healers and practitioners. Now, I am going to butcher these words, and I am so, so sorry. I really do apologize. When it comes to Spanish, I feel like I can read it just fine, and in my head it sounds normal, and as soon as I say it out loud, the accent sounds terrible. Just a heads up. So the pages become the hijas, which is daughters. The knights become the adelitas, or warriors. The mothers become madres, or the queens become madres, which is mothers. And finally, the kings become the curanderas, who are healers. And all of these are represented specifically by women healers, which again is a very, it's not something you see in every tarot deck. I thought that was really, really cool. They put just as much thought into every single part of this deck as they did into the artwork and into selecting the certain plants for certain cards. They also used numerology, just like tarot does, to decide what plants go on which numbered cards in the minor arcana. So in the tarot, fives usually represent some challenges or some strife. In the Herb Crafters tarot, the plants featured on the fives are threatened or endangered in some way. And each card tells you how you can hook up with this organization that they've partnered with called United Plant Savers so that you can contribute to saving that plant if you like. So those are white sage, black cohosh, golden seal, and slippery elm, which are all threatened by overharvesting or deforestation. And they're really, really important to ecosystems and to folk and herbal medicine. One day, I pulled one of these cards, it was Golden Seal, in a position asking ways that I can make a greater difference in the world. It was just, I don't ask that question every morning, although it's very nice and I might start. I just felt like asking it, and I pulled this Golden Seal card. And I was reading what it meant in the book, and it said, you know, hook up with United Plant Savers, their campaign to save and replant the Golden Seal. And I thought, oh, that's interesting, let's check that out. And I went to their website, and I was able to make a small donation right then and there to their Golden Seal efforts. They have a new campaign to try to save the Golden Seal. So that was a really, really beautiful way for me to put that into practice right away. There is a strong vibe of activism all through the deck, both environmental activism and, you know, feminist activism, activism for people, for plants, for the environment, for everyone. I really appreciated that. So when you're reading through the book, now you can use this with any sort of tarot meanings. They really are the same cards. You still have a magician and a high priestess, but they all, you know, have very specific write-ups according to the plant that's on there. And what you have at the bottom of the page for every single card is a section called Crafting With. And it tells you how you can make things with that plant in magic and medicine and regular life, which is absolutely outstanding. Now, I'm going to tell you guys your February tarot scopes in a few minutes, and I used the Herb Crafters tarot. And for each one of your signs, I chose one of the little crafts that they recommend, and recommended that for you based on what else you're going through for the month. So you'll get a little bit better of an idea then. But just for fun, let's find one in here. Let's find one. Let's find something really fun. There we go. Super fun. Okay, this one is, I loved the little write-up for this one. So we have the Hija of Air, the daughter of air, which is catnip. Adorable. So crafting with catnip, try something new. Grow catnip in a window pot or a garden. Perform a tea ritual with catnip before meditation to return to beginner's mind, which means to return to a more innocent and open place of your mind. And finally, strengthen the psychic bond between you and your familiars. Craft a catnip mouse. And it also recommends making mischief with a sleeping cat, which I always think is good advice. Now, not all of them are like that. Some of them recommend ways that you can create a spell using the herbs. Others recommend ways that you can make a real topical medicine with the herbs. It's very, very interesting. And again, it gives you a way to put that card into practice right away. And again, that is so valuable. So you have all these crafts, right? Like make infused honey or create a tincture. But it doesn't list a whole recipe. It just, you know, gives you a little make a tincture. But when you go to the back of the book where they do have other sources of information, this book is very extensive. you find instructions on how to make herb-infused honeys, syrups, teas, tinctures, salves, and a whole bunch of other crafts that you can make with magical and medicinal plants so that they can be used and you can connect with the spirit of the plants. So if you're actually trying to learn how to make contact with plant spirits, you can pull a card to figure out exactly what to work with, and you have tons of ways to do that right there. You know what kind of environment it's going to grow in. You know whether or not the plant is at risk or if it's thriving, if it's a weed, if it's something that needs to be planted and cultivated. As someone who knows what the regular Rider-Waite tarot, what the symbolism means, I was able to tell that the cards really do line up. So the herbs that they choose really do line up with the classical meaning of the card. The High Priestess is represented by mugwort, which is a plant of, you know, psychic visions and interpreting dreams. And one of the crafts is to create a mugwort dream pillow, which you guys know is like my favorite. And the High Priestess is a very psychic card. This character walks between worlds and can move into the spirit world, astral travel, all of that kind of stuff. So mugwort really matches that energy. And finally, the last of my five things that I loved about this deck is that these cards are not just about the plants. They're about the magic and medicines of the plants, but more importantly, the people and the practices that work with them. So the Hia of Water shows a small girl, you know, she's brewing chamomile tea with the help of her mother, and the Adelita of Earth is weaving Bridget's crosses from the leaves of a yucca, which is a very like strong symbol. The Mandre of Fire is crushing time, and she's got these books for potions and brews, and the Curandera of Air, she's holding up this rosemary, raising it to the sky after you can see that she's been using around it like a bowline knife. And she's raising it to the sky, and it's clearly just crafted. Rosemary is, of course, a very, very strong, magical, and medicinal plant. So beautiful attention to detail, but it really, really ties the entire deck together as a story. Our story, the story of healers and witches and medicine women, from all over North America. So it's a beautiful deck. It's incredibly well thought out, well researched, beautifully put together. They tell you a little bit about the artwork, about the relationship between the writer and the artist, and they give you tons of ways to work with the plants on these cards. If you're brand new to tarot, you might have a little trouble because you don't have that classic Rider-Waite symbolism in the cards. But don't shy away from it completely. It's not impossible. It's a beautiful deck with a very clear book and lovely symbolism all of its own, but you can still use it with regular tarot books as long as you're not trying to read individual symbols. So highly recommend. 5 mystical eyeballs out of 5. Okay, it is time for your February tarot scopes. Happy birthday, first of all, to our February Aquarians and Pisceans, and welcome to our season of love. You know, Valentine's Day is just around the corner. I happen to love Valentine's Day, probably because it's so cheesy. So to conduct your reading, I decided to use the Herbcrafters Tarot since we were talking about it, and I've included a couple of crystals that you can work with throughout the month to, you know, work with that energy. Now, I did say in our last episode that I'm going to be doing a sketchy herb and magic rock segment at the end of every episode. But what I've done today is I have sketchy herbs and magic rocks for each of you individually according to your sun sign. So you can find all of that on thefatfeministwitch.com. Just look for the February Taroscopes post, and I will also link to it in the description for the podcast. So let's get started. in general, if you're looking to work with a crystal for the month of February, something that's going to help you with any of the trials and challenges and celebrations that I mention in the following cards, I recommend green calcite. This is a stone that works with your crown and your heart chakras and can really link them together. So it increases success and manifestation. It's good for magic. It's good for healing. It's good for love, intuition, almost everything that you might need for the month coming up. This is a new crystal for me. A friend got it for me recently, and I don't have any calcite for some reason. It's not something I've used, but I've become really, really attached to the really positive and like supportive vibe that I get from this green calcite. It's really nice. So I recommend it for the month. It also matches our overall very green vibe here. So for Aries, you have the Four of Air, which is lavender. And this month, you may need to find yourself participating in some self-care rituals, create boundaries for yourself, and take a rest. The crystals that I recommend for you are Red and Gold Tiger's Eye and Fire Agate. You are still a fiery person, and that is a soothing feeling to you. So those can really help with that. And your craft from the Herb Crafter's Tarot is to make a lavender wand and use it to create boundaries against unwanted energies. Taurus, your card for the month is the Magician or Sunflower. So this is a month for you to embrace your power, to manifest things. It's a good time to get into working magic, working it with your hands, work with the elements, and, you know, really, really get into the vibe that you can create whatever it is that you want. Focus on the things that make you unique and powerful. This is a really good month for you. It's going to be a very confident kind of month. You're going to leave it in a very confident state. So the crystals I recommend for you are ruby and fuchsite. Highly recommend wearing in your bra or on a necklace that hangs near your heart, by the way. rose quartz and green obsidian. So your craft is to boost magical potency by eating sunflower sprouts for energy. Isn't that lovely? It's lovely. And it's a different way of using sunflower. There's sunflower oil, there's sunflower seeds. Bring in those sunflower sprouts for something unique. Gemini, you got the Hia of Air, the catnip card. Lovely. So this month you want to look at the world with kind of the innocence of a child, you know, observe nature, look at the animals and the bugs, and think about what all that means to you. And then feel really happy and comfortable communicating your feelings and your observations without any fear. Also, of course, make mischief with a sleeping cat. catnip is a very calming kind of sleepy herb, so this might be a time to, you know, take things too seriously this month. The crystals I chose for you are celestite, clear quartz, and amazonite. And your craft is strengthen the psychic bond between you and your familiars. Craft a catnip mouse. It also recommends making a regular kind of mindfulness ritual with catnip tea. Cancer, your card is the Ace of Air or Yarrow. So this month you might find yourself very obsessed with this, but you're going to be seeking truth, and probably from ancient sources like old stories and myths, connecting with ancestors, or again, stories of ancestors, kind of old magic like that. Open yourself up to this truth, even if it's painful. A lot of times these deep, deep, dark truths are deep and dark. They're scary. Now is the time for you to heal a lot of that stuff. So the crystals I chose for you are Peach Moonstone, Clear Quartz, and Aquamarine. And your craft is to craft a powder of dried yarrow leaves to stop bleeding. Use it in magical practice to heal wounds that cut to the bone. Isn't that a beautiful combination of ways to use it physically and spiritually? There was also a recommendation in the book of looking at the myth of Achilles and Chiron, because Chiron, you know, was in there in the Achilles story. But look into the stories of Achilles and Chiron. Look into Chiron in your birth chart and journal about your feelings about those topics. Look at healing and how you heal this month. Leo, your card is the Adelita of Fire, which is cayenne. Ah, get spicy. It's a nice spicy card. And on the card, you can see her making this very spicy, what's called a fire cider or fire cider vinegar. Very cool. So this is the month to show people what you are made of. And you love attention, so that should be very easy. but you may find yourself coming to the aid of ancient teachings or people who've been marginalized. Like I said, there is a strong activist vibe that runs through this tarot deck. And the Adelita is the warrior. So this is your month to be kind of a warrior. Be bold and take chances, and this will inspire others to do the same. You'll find yourself inspiring others to be more active about something that they care about. And that's just a beautiful thing. So the crystals I chose for you are Gold Tiger's Eye, Sunstone, and Citrine. So here's your craft. It says, stand up to corporate greed, craft your own fire cider like the Adelita on the card. And I looked in the back of the book to get you a little recipe. So what it says is, fill a jar 2/3 of the way through with equal parts of garlic, onion, horseradish, ginger, rosemary, thyme, and cayenne, and then fill the rest of the jar with vinegar, seal it up, and put it in a dark place, and let it cure for an entire moon cycle. And then you'll have your fire cider. And this is something that you can ingest for sure for bold, you know, burst of energy, but you can also use it in your magic as something to bless, to bring fire, to burn away. There's lots of ways that you can use that. Virgo, you got the 8 of air or licorice. Now, in regular tarot decks, this is the 8 of swords, which is a difficult card. So I want to ask, Virgo, are you feeling stuck or maybe fenced in lately? Is that something that you feel you can't break loose? You're looking at the things that maybe keep you behind. That sucks. If you've been feeling that way, I'm sorry. But the good news is that you don't have to stay that way, and now is the time to take a really good look around and see the various paths to freedom around you that you haven't been able to see before. Take one of those paths. If you can't see any way out, turn to loving and gentle friends and help them find your way. Get them to help you find your way. Let them know how you feel. Communicate what's going on with you right now. Your crystals are celestite, bloodstone, and green aventurine. Celestite especially I recommend right now. It's a very, it's got a very calming and protective vibe that also helps you communicate deep feelings and real truths. Libra, you got a beautiful card. You got the Adelita of Water, which is Ocotillo cactus. So, Libra, you love. All Libras love. But remember that strong boundaries are what make healthy relationships. It's important. Now, that doesn't mean you should lock your heart up, never let anyone see it again, never expose it, keep it locked away. Absolutely not. But keep it safe by figuring out what your boundaries are and asserting those. Sharing your love with those who deserve it and not letting other people get at those more squishy, sensitive parts. It's about being strong and knowing what you need to be happy and healthy and in love. So your crystals that I chose are lapidolite, rose quartz, and I picked up an amethyst skull. You could grab an amethyst or an ametrine even would be really nice. But there was something about the skull. The skull represents communication with me a lot. And I got the vibe that you need to be communicating your boundaries and communicating your feelings this month. So your craft. Use the inner bark of Ocotillo, the cactus, or another beloved plant as a reminder to protect your heart. Scorpio, I'm very happy to tell you that your card is the 9 of Water, which is peach or peach blossom. This is a very beautiful card. My own sister is a Scorpio and she's been struggling, so I was very happy to tell her that she might be having more of a sweet and sensual time this month than she has been for the last few. So February is shaping up to be a very lovely month for you. If you are someone who likes to celebrate Valentine's Day, go all out this year. And not just if you're in a relationship. Let yourself feel happy with yourself. give yourself props for all of the wishes and dreams that you've made come true, even if it feels like there's a lot that haven't come true. And take the time to truly love your own company. Let yourself enjoy things this month. Let yourself, you know, revel in the stuff that you do have. Treat yourself. Treat yourself like a goddess, you know? The crystals I chose are blue goldstone, aquamarine, and hawk's eye, which is a blue variety of tiger's eye. It's almost black. It's very nice. And your craft is to honor yourself with a sacred bath of peach blossoms or fragrance, sensual oils, and perfumes. And that's great advice because as a water sign, you know, that'll make you feel really refreshed, especially if you don't feel like you've been living this nine of water peach blossom life. That's okay. This month, force yourself to live in it. Sagittarius, you got the Ace of Water, which is plantain. Now, these are not the, you know, tiny bananas that you see that come from the Caribbean. Plantain is a leafy weed that grows between sidewalk cracks. It grows in your garden. It grows almost everywhere. And when you see the picture on the card, you're going to say, oh my God, I know exactly what that is. I trample on that regularly. It happens. So this is the month for you to follow your heart and your intuition. So you may find yourself on a new journey of love or spirituality, and luckily your capacity for both right now is limitless. You have a lot of room for love and for, you know, spiritual energy. So take a fresh look at some ancient forms of magic and practices that nourish the heart and the soul specifically. The crystals I chose for you are red tiger's eye and fire agate, and also this piece of agate. It's just agate. But it is a navy blue agate that has a pattern that almost looks like stars. Navy blue and stars. I just kept seeing navy blue and stars, and maybe because those are very Jupiter kind of vibes, but really lean on your planet of Jupiter this month. Lean into it. So Sagittarius, your craft is to shape plantain flower stems into hearts and leave them as gratitude offerings. Capricorn, my fellow Capricorns, we got one of these earth, which is slippery elm. This month, we may find ourselves in kind of a tight spot financially. Not great, but don't let the stress that can be caused by financial or economic hardship get to you this month. Now, that's easier said than done, because when it comes to financial hardship, it's a matter of life and death in your brain. You know, it's your instinctual fight or flight really kicks in because this is your stability. But try really hard to remember that this is not a permanent situation and you will be moving towards better things in the future. Also, you're a lot stronger and way more prepared than you realize. That money in your savings account will go a lot farther than you think it will. You will be okay. You have the skills to make it through kind of a tight month. Luckily, it's the shortest month of the year. Nice. But what you really need to do is to soothe that fear and that anxiety, because that can really, really get in your way and it can cause a lot of problems. The crystals that I chose for us for this month are chrysocolla, garnet, and green obsidian. And the craft is to take slippery elm lozenges to soothe the stomach upset by worry and stress. Also, honor the gifts of slippery elm, support United Plant Savers' efforts to protect this plant, and I put a link to that right on the blog so that if you guys want to learn a little bit more about slippery elm and its at-risk status, you guys can do that. Aquarius, beautiful Aquarius, it's currently your season. So you got the Four of Water, which is mint. And this might be a tricky month for you as well, because you may find yourself in a place that no Aquarius likes or can even really handle, and that's boredom and apathy. Ugh. It's the worst, right? So this month you want to focus on things that revitalize and renew yourself and renew your spirit. You know, quench yourself, your thirst for something new to move on by focusing on gratitude for what you have. You know, make that a little project, something to focus on all the time. Feel your feelings. But don't let them take over completely, especially feelings about boredom and about apathy, about having nothing or doing nothing or just nothing is happening. Don't focus on the nothing if you can help it. So this might be a slow month for you, but take that time to be more present, maybe practice some mindfulness, something that allows you to feel comfortable right where you are right now. The crystals I recommend for you are selenite, angelite, and snow quartz. And your craft is to place mint in a vial and wear it around your neck to help contain overwhelming emotions. Finally, our fishy friends, the Pisces. Your card is the Ten of Fire, which is comfrey. Really cool herb, by the way. It's a very healing herb. I use it in skin products. It's great. This month, you may feel overwhelmed or overextended, taking on a lot. Or maybe you're carrying it from January. You need to pass some of that off to other people. And this can be hard to do. I know it can be hard to do. I very much struggle with this. But asking for help or telling someone that you need help is not an indication of weakness. It's strength. It's strong to know your limits, to know when you need help, and to be able to trust someone else to help you. So trust others to lighten your load and give yourself some permission to let go of some of this stuff that you're holding on to. Your crystals are fluorite, amazonite, and aquamarine, but this issue with trusting other people to take some of the burden away from you, that's something that the green calcite can help you with a lot. It's a stone about building trust with other people. So check that out. And your craft is to write down what you need to release, roll it tightly in a comfrey leaf, and burn the leaf when it's dry. You can also, if you can get a hold of dry comfrey, you can put that on a charcoal disc, burn it like an incense, and also burn your little releasing petition paper. So good luck this month, witches. Some of us have got some trials and tribulations, not so fun, but some of us are also going to have a very positive or chill or quiet kind of February. Now, remember this. If one of your friends with one of these less auspicious cards, if they're acting a fool, remain calm and remind them that it's okay to let go. Offer help to any of your friends that are struggling and make it clear that you're there for them. You can help. You can guide. You can keep company. You can help someone nourish their heart and their soul. Whatever. Be there for people this month. Oh my God, witches. Did you hear? I wrote a book. Green Witchcraft, a practical guide to discovering the magic of plants, herbs, crystals, and beyond, is coming out February 25th, 2020. And until then, you can pre-order it anywhere online or where you physically buy books. Green Witchcraft is all about incorporating the natural world into your practice and into your life, creating a relationship with the earth. I also go through 15 flowers, 15 plants, herbs, trees, and crystals that you can use in your practice. And in every chapter, I have exercises and spells and recipes that you can use to put some of those things to good use. So February 25th, friends, mark it on your calendar. Green Witchcraft by Paige Vanderbeck will be available. All right, my witches, hedge, and otherwise, that is everything that I have for you today. On this last episode of January, I cannot believe that February is here, mostly because all of January has felt like March. It's the longest January of my life. So I hope you all have a wonderful last few days of January. And if you're celebrating, a wonderful Imbolc or Candlemas this weekend to celebrate. If you want to find out more about me and about the podcast, you can do that at thefatfeministwitch.com. You can find me across social media by just searching Fat Feminist Witch. And if you'd like to support the podcast, you can do that by going to my website, clicking Buy Me a Coffee, or joining The Witch and Bitch through Patreon. It's $10 a month, and you get access to the private membership group where we do live meetups, and we have a book that we read together, and we do a lot of really fun stuff. And all of that money goes towards keeping the podcast up and supporting all of the work that I do here. Of course, just liking and listening to the podcast, sharing it with your friends, and maybe leaving a review does so much good. So thank you to all of you for all of the support that you've given me. I hope you all have a very fantastic weekend, and thank you so much for tuning in today.